I have a motto or a phrase that's from a very famous Norwegian poem by Arnulf Øverland, who said it's called "Do Not Dare to Sleep," and it's followed me my whole life also as a lawyer. And if I'm going to try to translate it to English, it's "Do not tolerate other people's suffering just because it's not happening to you."
My dear team, get ready for a total masterclass of how to believe in yourself. And by the way, our new team member is a literal gift to our squad. She is one of Norway's most successful football players, was the first female football commentator in her country. She then followed her heart and inner call for justice and became a lawyer before turning back to football and becoming technical director of the Norwegian Football Association, which she today leads as its president. We met during a conference that I hosted, and I cannot put into words how grateful I am that she agreed to do this interview and make time for us, because I'm not sure if any other president would do that. You might know her for famously speaking out against the injustices around the Qatar World Cup in 2022. Our conversation today, however, was very personal and much more about who she is as a person than what she does as a president, even though we covered that as well, of course. We spoke about courage, about shame, about leadership. We will learn about her utopia for women's football and her goal for her tenure. Her head coach really touched me, as well as her favorite football memory. I even had a little tear in my eye there because I could relate so much. So yeah, I'm definitely a huge fan, even more impressed after today's talk, and I hope you will be too after listening. And now, get ready for our first president team member. This is Lise Klaveness.
So it's actually about the Second World War and indifference and to be passive, and so it's a poem and a motto which has meant a lot to me, that try to lean into dilemmas even though they don't give you the emotional response because they're not happening to you right now.
Wow.
If that makes sense.
It definitely does make sense. And it contains so much because it's, you know, this world can be super overwhelming by itself on its own already. And leaning in for other people that, you know, opens up this whole other realm for you to get active in too. So you've been a very active person for other people in your whole life. Would you say that?
Yeah, well, I guess I've always had that call to action around being a representative for people that needs it. That's why I became a lawyer. I guess that has been sort of the way I felt that I could help and be a better version of myself, is to represent people when they cannot speak or if they cannot for some reason know their rights. So this was very... This made me become a lawyer. Football has been more of an emotional free space for me, but where I played. But the lawyer part was very driven by this sort of idealism. But then you go into your everyday life and it's been more of a reminder and a disciplining thing for me, that remember who you are and why you want to do it. And then because, you know, everyday life takes over and you need a house and a place and you need salary, and I think it's a very good and disciplining reminder. So I've had this poem on my wall and everywhere where I've gone, and followed me.
And it's definitely really closely connected to courage as well, because standing up for others, I feel, really does need a lot of courage in yourself. What would you say does courage mean to you, or which role does it play in your life?
Yeah, well, courage, I guess, is something other people would say to me, and I could of course say it to other people. It's not a word. I think first it's a case. You have a case, you have a problem you want to solve, and you have a passion for something, and then you move over the courageous part, I guess. That happens when you know it's right, but you know it's risk. It involves risk. So for me, I guess it's at some point, of course, you need to be courageous also as a podcast leader and or a lawyer, or, you know, you do stuff that is outside your comfort zone. But I guess courage in the deepest sense is when you can lose, I guess, everything. But you know, still, it's the right thing to do. Mm. And of course, it's not so often I'm in those situations, but sometimes. And then, it's not the courage. Is, I guess it's the final portraying of it. But the process in itself was that you knew it was right. You know, it's something that you have leaned into, you have understood and listened to and felt, and then it's no way back.
And I mean, I feel flattered that you're comparing all the courages to one another, and the courage a podcast host needs to the courage a leader of a whole football association needs.
That's just life, you know. We all need a lot of courage, you know, just to live. And it's everywhere that we need to make choices that are dangerous for us emotionally or physically. So.
And for sure, I can't wait to learn more about your decisions, about your situations in which you did show courage. And thank you, first of all, for this really deep and really meaningful start into our conversation. And now I'm more than excited to bring the ball or pass the ball back to you, because my guests always get to introduce themselves a little bit, kind of like they would looking on or at a FIFA card, you know? What would be very important for us to know about Lise Klavenes?
Yeah.
And what would be on her card?
Yeah, what would be on my card? It's a good question. I'm Lise. I'm now a president of the Norwegian Football Federation. So that's my current position, but I would say that I'm a football player. I don't play anymore, but it's part of my identity. It's been my whole life. So I would always refer to myself as a player, and I always try to play whenever I can. And I'm a mother. Maybe that should come first. I'm a mother of three boys, a lawyer, and married to a woman called Ingrid. And I guess my three favorite words are, you know, passion and empathy and discipline. So maybe that could come into my card.
I love that you mentioned those three words. That's super unique. I have a favorite and a favor for language, for words, for sure. Why is it so important for you to have your three favorite words? And I don't even think a lot of people have favorite words to be on your card.
No, just if you want to, if it's a card, you want to know some facts. But
definitely.
I guess it's always, to me, more interesting to read what we all like to be good people. So, but what do we prefer of the words of the flavors? It's interesting to me, and no one is better than the other. You know, it's always, but it says something about a person and the personality. Would you go for? Would you go for passion, or would you go for joy? You know, and it's different. Or would you go for fairness or empathy, or, you know? So it's, I guess it's. I'm a lawyer. Words mean something, and it's always meant a lot to me to really understand words and rules and or rights. I'm not a very rules person, ironically. I'm very flexible with the rules of order. You know, I'm not that kind of. But when it comes to rights, of course, it's important to know what's the lower threshold of how we treat people in our society, and really, really try to. We will never get to the goal, but it's still very important to have that empathy and you know, continuous conversation of how we can lift the lower level for everyone.
You say you're not, ironically, a rules person. How does that go together with being the president of the Norwegian Football Association?
I don't know if you, in English, it's different with rules or regulations. You know, of course, I'm very into to rules and paragraphs. It's you know, I'm a lawyer, yeah. And I've written a lot of texts that were to interpret different regulations, and it's also a passion for me to do that. But I would very often come late. I'm very flexible. You know, in a good and a bad way. I'm not a duty person, if you know what I mean. I'm very disciplined, but I have what's it called? It's flexible, and I'm not very rigid around things, which can be annoying to people. And and this is how I also see other people. So for me, it's blurred lines around those kinds of things. But I know that it's different for very many around me, especially in the football business and the operational part of the business. So I need to always work on this issue. This is why I'm. I say it, being a lawyer, I think I'm in a minority, but we're still a group, you know, we're still a group.
So how does that influence your leadership style?
No, I guess that's leadership is very personal. You know, you are a person as a leader. And I guess for me, I would always prefer to go where energy is. I will always prefer to go where the visions and, you know, the possibility to change is, more than control and structure. And it's very important with control and structure. And my backseat driver is also control and structure, if you lose everything, you know, when everything's just all over the place. But I think I would drive people pretty mad going very long in the energy direction until I finally try to gather it. And I like to be in the open. But I have very deep respect for very many of my colleagues that are not like this and are one of, you know, the best colleagues I have that prefer coming from the other angle. So it's to be a leader is personal, but it's of course also personal for the other people. So I try to learn and respect that for many other people to just start meetings 5 minutes late is very, very draining. And for me, it can be a very good way to speak to people before the meeting starts and to have a safety period. So it's always pros and cons.
Definitely. But then I feel like with the right respect and the right communication and openness with everyone, even 5 minutes should not be a problem.
No, I've learned now. I'm 43. I keep forgetting 42 or 43, but it's the oldest. Yeah, I've always remembered. I've learned that this is how I am. I cannot be anyone else. So if I'm a leader, this is where you know I will lean into, you know, that will be the main. But I know that it's not like this for everyone, and I've learned, you know, also being a national team player the hard way, that being very flexible and creative is and fluent with times and clothing, and, you know, can be very disturbing for someone else's concentration, so as the other part is for me. So now when I'm a grown up and I've been in this, been in the work life for, you know, decades, I've learned to really appreciate people that are different than me. And I know that if we're too many creative, fluent people, it needs something else, you know. So I have people around me that, and we all have everything, you know. It's not like I can really go into structure also, because I know that structure allows creativity, but I would prefer that someone else do it, and then I can go into the energy space.
You mentioned a couple of times now that passion really matters to you as well, the joy. And looking at your career path, obviously the active career seems to be matching your position right now, but the whole lawyer part kind of seems to fall out of the picture, kind of. Would you say that you did follow your passion throughout your whole life so far, mainly?
Yeah, I really wanted to be a lawyer as a kid even, and it was my biggest dream to become a lawyer. So it was a real passion to me, and it still is, and I still work as a lawyer, I think, or as a judge, or I use the methods, and I really miss sometimes to, you know, the open, transparent pro con. Everybody sees where the power is, and when it's not with me, it goes to the next judge, and I have a very formal relationship to power. You know, it's I know that I have the power because of my role. It's not like I never doubt that people would. It's not a personal thing. It's personal to be in it, and then I would have to flavor it. But it's to me very important to know the mandate, you know, I work. Mm-hmm. So I guess this has been, and in football, this is not the case. The culture is different, which is also fascinating, of course. And I've learned very much when I started to work as a technical director, I would call in memos and thought that it would be very valuable that I had a very transparent process where people could see what I want, pros and cons, and why I want, what it costs. But then everybody was just very stressed. And what is this, you know, dominating? What is this? It was suspicious. What's to me is very transparent and safe, and for the culture was suspicious. And what is this? Because in football, you call first, you anchor, you get people along, and then you take it in the open space. And then the case is already done. And the poor people that did not know what was happening, they were not invited. So, which is, you know, the opposite of a court process where you have all this lobbying, but when you're in a court, it's open and everyone, you have to say everything. Everything has to be said there, and you would never call the judge before the meeting. So
I learned a lot. That is so interesting.
Yeah. And it's, of course, I've now adapted more to football because I know it's cool also with informal culture, but I think we need a balance. So now you ask me if it's a passion. It sounds boring maybe with this, but to me it's I was a very passionate lawyer and a judge, and to me it to find, really figure out what the right thing to do was in a case and to write the right verdict, it was a big passion, not just a joy, a passion, like a suffering mission sometimes, because it was awful things sometimes, but very meaningful and very and I guess for me it's very important to learn, and when you're, yes, a judge, it comes new things all the, in Norway we have a general court, so you would have, you know, oil platforms and cars and robberies and rapes, and you know, it's everything, it would, you know, it's a general court, so you would learn from the best in different areas very fast. So they would try to get the judge to understand very fast, which is something I really like, to meet competent people that with areas I don't know. So a big passion, actually, even though it sounds maybe a bit nerdy.
Well, still a passion, maybe. Yeah. Maybe nerdy, but yeah, that's fine. Yeah. What really struck me about what you just said was football has a very different culture. And I mean, looking at the development of professional football, men's or women's, over the past years, everyone notices that big changes are happening and that, you know, the whole landscape is different. What would you say is the current football culture that you're working with?
Yeah, well, so it's a culture, football culture is it's so many things, because football is, you know, a social cultural phenomenon, you know. So of course that's the first thing to say about football. It's everywhere, you know. So it's a phenomenon gathering billions of people, but we are gathered in a very many different cultures. But I guess the culture of being affected by a World Cup final, you know, that would be in the end that gathers, you know, the billions and billions. But then you, of course, when you come to Champions League finals and to the boardrooms, it gets smaller and smaller. But as a global phenomenon, it's the biggest thing we have. It's bigger than religion, and it's not even a sport. You know, it's so much more. And I guess one thing about the football culture is that it's owned by so many. You know, it's owned by the football supporter. It's owned by the player. It's owned by the father of the player. You know, everybody would feel that they have the right and they have a stake and that they have the right to they're competent. If you're a doctor, you know, you meet people, they can Google, but they respect the doctor's professional opinion. And I think in football, it's own everywhere. You know, it's very fragmented. And that's a power in itself because, you know, you have all the stakes everywhere. So, but when it comes to the football power and leadership, which was what I was talking about, it's high risk, high reward. And I guess then it becomes, at least the culture is so that it's very informal, it's a lot of money, but still very unprofessional in that sense, mm-hmm. that it's based on relations and not so much written and transparent processes. And I guess it's also because it's so media is so into it and it's always trying to find critical points that it's a self-protective culture that has grown up, to be the dominating one, because if you would have a court system, it would just make headlines all the time, which would be very disturbing. So to be fair to the football culture and the informal culture, it's difficult to change, because the safest thing would just be to avoid rumors, to avoid speculations. But the bad part of that is that it will just stay with between me and the other president, or it becomes very personal and it becomes very shut to my person, and it's difficult to then make a career plan for other women or other. So it's not a per se good culture, but I understand it, why it is like it is.
You mentioned all the money coming in, or all the money being within this culture, within this environment, and that's been changing throughout the past years incredibly. We have whole countries investing, we have Champions League changing, we have private owners and VC groups buying clubs. How are you observing this kind of change?
No, that is a change in itself. And it will affect the culture, I guess, European sports culture. You know, which has it has evolved all the time since also the Bosman verdict. You know, it's been professionalizing very fast. We feel it's long, but it's very fast. You know, with the amount of money now, it's come to a new threshold and a new change. And I think sometimes, to me, it's like a bubble which is now injected money in a bubble that could not go so much further, I think. But now we have a new players in, new states and private equities coming from outside Europe. And of course, the private equity and the multi-ship ownership structures, which, you know, all change would be criticized. So that's one part of it. The other part is that it will change, of course, the culture. And when states are running the train, because then it will be more like national projects than maybe sports projects or businessmen projects, because we have to be fair, it's not like it's been idealism up till now. So now it would be more like state project than this owner. Or so I don't know if it will in itself be worse, but it's changing, it's disruptive. What I'm concerned, what I try to lean very much into is to not be like this populist critic of it, because money is money and we need money, and it's, we are part of a circus, and a good circus, you know. It's something we love, it's something that we think is important for grassroots, that we have all these very visible stars. It's uniting the world. Also, you can go into a refugee camp and you would find Messi and on their back, which is it's worth his salary, you know what I mean. I don't care about his salary, but you know, it's very important to have this gathering moments for the grassroots. So I think the circus has it's justified, but when the money value buys too fast important sports values such as freedom of speech and press freedom and safety of LGBTQ, which has never been very good in football, for especially for men, but it's starting in the last decades to be much better, we can see retreat of that, and I think it's very important to have when money comes and change it very fast, I think without knowing, we have suddenly sold out something really, really important to the identity and the value of the sport. So I think this is what concerns me more than single players earning a lot of money, or, you know, it's a lot of finance people also earning too much money. You know, this is the biggest sport in the world. So I guess this is how capitalism works. Salaries are pushed upwards. But of course, equality. I think it's important that we realize that it's always a competition about people's time and recognition. So if we don't at the same time stimulate the women's side, we can reduce the women's chance to reach its potential, because we cannot avoid that it's somewhat a competition of time and recognition and media spots and competence, coaches going to the men or the women's side. So I think it needs to be much more balanced than it is today.
Let's dive into the the whole equality discussion in just a second, but maybe you can just elaborate for me one more time how this, you know, involvement, the whole injection, the money injection that you or the picture that you drew for us there is affecting your work as, you know, head of a whole football association.
not so much just now, because we are a smaller country far north, but first of all, it's changing the conversations, you know. In December, we will have a FIFA Congress voting for new World Cup hosts, and that is always controversial. And I think every country should be able to host. We should be able to play football everywhere. So I don't go into such discussions with, you know, this England is better than, you know. I think it's football should be played everywhere. But when you have a mega event that gathers the whole world, then you have some global issues concerning, you know, what is the left impression on freedom of speech, LGBTQ, all these things. And also, it's a very important leverage to lift women's football. So is it used for that? Or is it used for not doing that? Because trends go up or down. You know, it's very rare you see that it's just flat after such events. So if you use such events to turn the trend down, then that is bad. So for now, I think it's affecting us indirectly, but I think it's very likely that it will affect everyone, with, I guess, more money into the transition system, more players going into the leagues of different countries, or newer countries in new players, if I can say that. I think it will be more discussions about having Champions League games here or there, and these kinds of discussions. But I guess more money in, which is in itself positive, if you consider the money coming from fair sources, but take that away, I think it still changed us. And it still changed the routes and the pathways of players and coaches. We've always been changing, so that's not the drama, but it's happening fast, and it's happening it's a big jump. So let's see how it will affect us. I think all changes, it's always disruptions will happen, and I think that's why, I guess, I think it's so important to lean in, be conscious, and it's also different than, even if it's going somewhere, it should maybe go somewhere with some stops on the way, where you ensure, you know, sometimes in the media it can be, the discussion is very black or white. If you cannot stop something, then what's the point, you know? So I think the whole, and I'm very interested in the game also, of course, you know. I the game is what keeps me here, and I try to stay very focused also on the field, and how will it affect the quality of the game, and will it affect, and for now, I don't think so. It's been, I think the biggest challenge there is that we have so many events, you know, it's so many competitions, and the players, the quality of the games and the motivation of players, I think now we see that it's going a bit downwards.
Oh, really?
This is at least my opinion, that we've reached a limit of how many competitions we can have, you know, at the top level.
That's so interesting. And, you know, just picking up on that trend, turning, towards the downside, you said the same thing about the women's game. You or we or the football world should, you know, be leveraging on certain big events to promote the women's side, especially a little bit more. So you feel like that has not been happening in the past?
No, not to a sufficient extent, at least. And I hopefully we will see in the United States, Mexico, Canada World Cup that it will happen. The United States have at least been very pioneering on the women's side. And
yes,
hopefully we can see that. That connection, and also Canada and Mexico. And we've seen that football has grown on the women's side in Mexico, and probably because of this World Cup for women. So it's cool. But normally I think that it's also a very good leverage, but we don't, as football leaders, we don't use enough time to also reflect that summer, you know, you it's a summer less of moving the power and the energy towards women, so which it needs. And these are very often the same people, even though you have a lot of autonomous culture on the women's side. It's still coaches, it's still facilities, it's stadiums, it's TV, an audience
coverage
that has a limit to what they will see. So I think when you have these mega events that put the world eyes on you for months and weeks, it will be very efficient to use it structurally. Not that this week we should interrupt the world men's World Cup. I love the men's World Cup. It has been my, you know, the highlight, yes, of my life for every 4 years since I was a kid. Yes, and also Euros for men. So it's been really, really, and I love men's football as much as I love women's football. But I think it's a responsibility we have, and I think we can also do it without bringing the men's football down. I think we will see new audiences come if we do this.
I love that. What would you say is your personal utopia for the women's game in the near future?
Oh, I guess it's two things, you know. It's three things. It's that it's a global sport, you know. It's everywhere, so it's not. It's Asia, it's Africa, it's everywhere, and it's starting to happen slowly, but still. And secondly, it's full stadiums, you know, that
yes,
it's people are there, because it's not just about the game. It's also the joint event of being there for you and me. As the biggest childhood dream I had was when I was to watch stadiums or watched World Cups on television, it was full. So it's also my memory. It's not just the player's memory. And third, I guess that you, when you go to grassroots events, it's 50-50, you know. It's boys and girls everywhere, because it is the grassroots. It's also other sports that is amazing, of course, but football is so accessible that,
yes,
it will always be a window of how active your girls are. And if you see one out of 1,000 is a girl, then it's not a healthy. Then I think they are too concerned with school, and then they can eat too unhealthy. And I think for girls, or they go into the, I just want to be slim, you know, to early life.
Mm-hmm.
Life is too long to not have fun, you know. And I see so many young women just all these ambitions and try to keep fit out of, you know, how they look. But the joy of falling and doing uncoordinated, difficult sports and master it is very many places are reserved for men. So I guess on that three layers, full stadiums, full, you know, full fields with young girls daring to do mistakes and not being self-conscious,
yes,
about it, and then going to, you know, Africa or Asia and see girls play.
I love that. Thank you so much. And very tangible with your three steps as well. That's perfect. Lisa, we're coming to the second part of our conversation, and we have three little categories now. Usually I have little bubbles.
Okay.
Don't have them today, unfortunately. So you're just going to pick a color, and that's how we're going to proceed. Which one will it be?
Pink.
The pink one. Is the shootout, I'm not sure if you can read it, that's a little, you know, quick question situation. You can answer shortly or elaborate. I prepared this for you, and I'm very excited to see what we got here.
Yeah, cool.
Do you rather consider yourself, and we kind of covered this, a football player or a football official?
Football player, definitely.
Yeah,
10 out of 10.
Do you have a favorite moment looking back on your active career?
Yes, it's actually, you know, it's not a very... I have one moment, it's I scored a goal in a game and we won a lot, so it was not a very important goal, but I scored a goal that I had rehearsed. So I rehearsed and practiced this. I took it on my chest with the full speed and I volleyed it into the goal, and I'd practiced for years and years and years. And what the reason why I remember it as my most valuable memory is also how the team knew that I'd practice a lot, and then everybody gathered around
this.
Me and I practiced, you know, I would always, until I was 30, I would stand alone after practice. I was very nerdy with the ball. So just the feeling of belonging, that they knew who I was, because it was 8-0 or something. So it's just that they cheered so much for the technical accomplishment and knew that how much it meant to me. And then I guess I felt also as a good teammate since they gave that to me, if you know what I mean. Yeah.
Oh my God, this has me emotional even. I can totally relate to this.
Yeah,
and this is such
thanks.
A bonding moment on, an emotional level
and
too.
And we were pretty grown up then. So I guess it was also sort of a finalizing career. You know, I was a lawyer then, and so it was going into an end.
Oh, I love this. Beautiful. What's your most important tool in your probably pretty busy work days?
Tool as a physical tool or person?
Well, could be an app, could be whatever. You're free to answer flexibly the way you like it.
Yeah. I guess it's my backpack. You know, I have a backpack everywhere and I forget a lot of things. So I realized after being a lawyer and a leader, I had all these bags and fancy bags and I realized I have to be myself. I have to have a big thing I can put everything in this order. So I have a big backpack and I go around with, as a president, I look like a first year school student. But it's a big one. It has rooms for everything in it.
I love it. Whatever works.
Yeah.
Perfect. Love the answer. On a scale from 1 to 10, where would you rate your own courage?
Oh, I find that very difficult because, you know, for some years ago, I took, for example, the parachute license. You know what I mean? Where you can jump parachute.
Yes.
And I did that because I wanted to challenge myself and I did it. But I was so scared. You know, I was so surprisingly scared. But I was, I guess, too old because I was in my 30s. And I guess and a lot of the other people that took it. And of course, just to do that, I guess, it says something about me because somebody would not ever jump from a plane. But the other people I took them with, they were so cool, you know. And I realized, I thought I was so much more courageous. I was shaking and I very, very feel sick to my body. And I realized that I'm not, but I am courageous enough to still do it, you know.
Yes.
So I guess I would rate myself pretty high for that reason. I feel very strongly and I still do things. So I guess 8.
I love it. What do you wish to do? This is not an easy one for football until the end of your candidacy.
Yes, I focus very much about the health of the players, the health of the game, and how the game can also help the health of the society. And that sounds very swishy, I guess, but to me it's very concrete. You know, it's the game itself, it's the players, what I told you. So I really want to change it. Yeah, commercial is very important, but I think it should always come from the health of the players and the health of the game. And I think we're not going necessarily in the right direction there. And from the health of the society, I really think that football can be a driver of social good change. Sometimes
Definitely.
We are reactive to it, but I think we could maximize that much more. So, and I dream of, 100% equality. I will not reach that to the end of my term now. But I think everyone would be happier with it, to be honest. I don't think it will be a threat to any men. I think it will be,
as it should
finally
be. Yeah.
You know, end of this discussion. Now we can focus on the quality of the game.
Yes. Oh, I love this. What's your favorite method or source of self-development?
Two things, I guess. The one thing is that I'm very honest with myself. So I when I feel very defensive or rude to someone, or I go into the field. Why did I say that? Well, you know, why did I feel that way? And it can be a shameful process, you know. It's sometimes shameful to feel envious, or, you know, and I just try to strip it away, you know. And I'm not that person, so I need to take it away. I need to end. So I guess brutal honesty is a tool for me. And to what is the dangerous part to actually feel that way one day, you know? Then I can take it away tomorrow. Or that's one thing. And the other thing is that I have, which is a cliche, but good people around me. You know, I have really, really the general secretary here, my chief of staff, my advisor. These are, and also other people I've hired that are better than me on a lot of things. And they are not yes people. We are really discussing things, and it can get really annoying sometimes. So I learn from them. It's not like. And they know that I have to discuss to learn. You know, I have to fight a bit to learn, and they. So to have good people.
I don't think it's cliche at all. It's actually pretty important and pretty deep. And the last one is more like a joke. What's Hillary Clinton like?
Well, I met her sometimes now. I think she's really an impressive woman. I'm not a person that, you know, I'm a very egalitarian in me, and it's a personality I have. I don't care if you work on the street or if you're a president candidate, and it's a good and a bad thing. You know, sometimes it's been a big problem for me also that I have this, but I still, so this is how I enter any room, but I felt that she was a very impressive woman, a lot of knowledge, very direct. Cool. And very, very. To me, she came across as someone who really, really believes in what she's doing around equality, especially, and democracy. So, I know a lot of the criticism that she's had, and I don't know that. I'm not an American. I don't know the. But you know what, authenticity when you see it, and I think she's coming from that place. You know, it's from within.
Amazing answer. Thank you. And I know I told you that you're getting to choose the direction or the order of our
You fooled me.
Thingies, but I fooled you. Yeah. I just decided that we're going to move on with the head coach with the green paper because it fits so perfectly to you saying it might sound cliche, but it really matters what people I have around me. And the head coach is actually the category where I always ask my guests, like, who, or maybe even it's an activity or something else you come up with creatively, helps you or has helped you in the past to go through especially tough or dark episodes of your life.
Who helps me?
Yeah, either who, or maybe it's an activity or something else that you may come up with.
Yeah, it's the same answer as before. You know, if I meet the wall, you know, in a case or a period, or I only have two things, and the one thing is honesty. You know, that I don't go a long time and suppress feelings. I'm not able. You know, it's very strong in me. So. I don't go around being passive aggressive. I realize that I can go home and cry. You know, I need to. What's the problem now? And then, what is the actual reason for this? Because then it takes me away from seeing others. So I need to take it away. You know, I don't feel well when being very, very self focused. And when I have a problem, you go into yourself. So it's the honesty again. And then, I tell people. I tell people also the awkward part of how I feel. Of course, this is just few people you can do that, but then you get this reflection, and then you get this also trust. So these are the only two things I have. You know, I don't, and of course, to train. You know, you have to have dopamine. You have to go for walks, or you really, really need to go to when you're feeling depressed, or you know the work is overloading you and you're getting smaller and smaller. You need to move.
So are you just walking, or are you moving in other ways too?
Yeah, walking is sometimes, you know, a very good way, because then you can, but you know, I'm a Norwegian, then to me just walk flat is very frustrating. It needs to be up a mountain, you know. You need to be so, the resistance, so that your mind and your thoughts are going simpler and simpler, you know, so that you have to breathe.
Oh,
but running,
that,
I guess, is the best.
Running. I hate running. I was very happy when the running in the team was over.
I also hate running in the way, but it's self-whipping, you know. Then when you're done with the running, all other problems are very small.
True.
It's boring.
It also reminded me of... No, don't worry. A quote that I found that really impressed me that you said, I force myself to see the best in people. If you compare yourself with others, wondering if you're ugly, you're ugly and you don't perform.
Yeah.
It, you know, kind of sounded like what you just said. You have to do something harder, so your problem in your head becomes smaller and smaller.
Yeah, it's not like it's easier for me than anyone else. So it's just, and I don't know how other people reflect on these issues because it's so personal. But since I speak to young people a lot, I try to tell them, for me at least, it's been a choice. It's not like you every day feel confident or you feel that you want to lift other people up. Sometimes they are actually in your way, and maybe they're not in your way, but you feel that they're in your way. But the good news is that it's not a good place to be. You don't feel happy being there. So it's much better to feel like a good person. So it's a choice, I think. But it's a choice that needs also, you need to forgive yourself for feeling other things underneath or along the way. And for me, this has been very important. When younger players have come and taken over my position, for example, it's not easy. It shouldn't. You're ambitious.
No, it's not.
But at some point, it's a choice. When you know when you start to obstruct other people, and then don't, you know. But you have some areas where you actually think you are a competitor, and then of course you compete. But to me, this has been a choice. And if you choose to think conspiratoric about other people, of course, it comes easy to me because I have a naive starting point. But I've realized that it's better to... You get a lot of warnings in your life. And I don't think we should always listen to them about persons. I think it's better and more efficient, is my experience, to know it's not... It's something can look like a conspiracy, but it can also just be a misunderstanding or bad advice. You know, that they have this cartel going, but they haven't really talked to you. Or so, at least for me, this
that's precious.
Think the best of other people it sounds very moral, but to me, it's actually self protection. You know, it's efficient. You know, and you don't know what they said anyway, so it's better to believe what's the best version. It has to be realistic, you know. So you have to know what's happening with the world. But within that realism, think that it's possible to get this person to think positive things. And for me, it's been very efficient working in an environment, very competitive environment, very male dominated.
Yes,
I've loved everyone I work with, and I think they have also been lovely. But I think it's also a choice.
Oh, I love that. Even though this choice is not an easy one, tough to make and tough to remind yourself of.
It is.
You haven't made that, but definitely, yeah. And it's nice to feel that you're in charge too.
Yeah, exactly. You can choose that. It's not a personality. You have both thoughts in your... I think most of us have both. And of course, nothing more annoying than people that are just happy when it's sad thing happening, you know, it's it'd be really, you know, lean in. But when, so you have to go into the dilemma, of course, but then try to, if yeah, for me it's been very important to also think that I can deserve that from other people, you know, that they don't think the worst of me when I do, when I have to cut contracts. So, you know, I have a job where this is what I do, you know, and it's not fun. It's not fun to disappoint people. You don't, yeah, you don't do it out of evil. You don't do it because you, you know, it's, so I try to think the same, and it's, I think it's not easy, but it's easier to live like this than the other way around.
Oh, I love that. And yeah, it's your own choice. And Lise, we have one last category left. It's the throw-in, and I'm really excited to hear what you will bring to us. What's a topic that you would like to give a stage to?
So what I want to put on the agenda as the most important topic for me, or?
Yes.
Well, I guess I've spoken a lot about all the things I care about in this program. So it's, I guess it's no surprise what I care about. But I have a very, I like to operate in the border between, you know, the individual rights and the collective force, you know what I mean. So I think for me the whole lean in part is very important, that if you work with something and you see a big problem, then lean into it, try to learn something about it, and then make allies. So, you know, it's the good old cooperation part I would bring to the agenda, and also the thing to believe in change. You know, when we have a problem, for example, with equality in sport, it's very difficult to change. And if you meet people would say it's very difficult to change, but it's also very difficult to change because we say it's difficult to change. So it's fully possible to do something about problems, especially those kinds of, you know, where it's movement. So and for me, my experience is that one person can make that change, not alone, but one person has made me do big choices that has made me change something else. I've never done it alone, but it's been, so I think that humbleness towards the team, but still the responsibility to think what can I bring to the table now. Don't underestimate that, I think, in leadership. And I think it's just as important leading a podcast, you know, that it's the same everywhere. You know, it's where do we want to go with these bigger issues? It's, if we really want equality, then it's possible, but then it needs to be in every choice you make.
What if I'm asking this question out of, you know, the background that this is a show directed especially at girls, and I know that a lot of girls in the younger generation have trouble believing in themselves and being confident, and you're this smart, charismatic person, strong, courageous, you gave yourself an 8 there too. What if now there's a shy, not very confident girl listening to you saying, just lean in, just make allies. Yeah. Maybe that's really hard. How can you start on a small level?
You start on a small level. You know, it's not like, it's not like I the reason why I rate myself 8 on a courageous scale is because I feel very strongly about everything, and I feel very self-critical, and I've always done. Yes. And I've always felt very strongly about playing a bad game, for example. I could be down for a week. Not because of ambitions, just but the feeling of not performing was very weighing to me. And it took, you know, I was 29 until that was sort of being better, you know. And so I think it is, I felt very courageous then to play a national team game after that, you know. And so I think it is to start on a small level, but also to be very concrete. What is your fear? If you're shy, your problem is, it's not an impossible problem, then maybe you hold that speech, you know, in that So I think it's very important to be concrete with yourself, or else it's such a big, big problem. But maybe it's, you have to shoot on that goal. If you don't never shoot, you will never score. And this I say because people said it to me. You know, I learned this. You know, I dribbled everywhere. This is literal. You know, I played. So when I never scored, and a guy came to me and said, if you're going to have this high risk playing style, you have to score more. Yeah, but I don't know how. You never shoot. You know, you actually never have a ball on the goal. And after that, I became top scorer of the league. And of course, it took a lot of work. It's not like an easy one, but I started to shoot on the goal at least twice. And then I measured myself. So it was start on a small level and a concrete level. And I think that then you will have this spiral.
Oh, I love this. And Lisa, I'm at the end of my questions. We're coming to an end of this episode. And first of all, thank you so much
for
making the time for, you know, enriching my community with your very personal and open input.
That's a huge pleasure.
And coming from, if you never shoot, you'll never score, which is basically already the perfect ending to this episode. Yeah. One more and one last time, I get to give the word back to you and ask you to close this episode now with a pep talk to everyone listening, why it matters so much to believe in yourself, in your goals, whatever they are, and never give up on them.
No, I guess you have this life, and we all know, all feelings of fear is telling you that something is important to you. It's a self-valuable feeling, you know. So I think just to act on that is important and will bring you up just by doing it. So for me, you know, I've ended up with all these football metaphors, but because it's so concrete, but I use them
in
the courtroom.
Please, no, perfect.
So I literally mean that, you know, shoot on the go, if and then you will see what you have to adjust to move on, and also pass it to someone else. If you see that they're alone and you feel I cannot be a good person, I don't know how, and I feel shy, you know, it's a pass to someone, and then you realize they will pass back. So for me, this has been, you know, my whole philosophy as a leader, also to try to be concrete, but also think it's possible to break through something. So it's concrete but not small, if I can say it that way. And the most important thing is that I've learned this from someone. You know, it's not like this. I've looked up and I've seen that someone has done it before. So it's always about being, you know, humble but confident. And it's, you're not that every day. It's something. At the end of a month, you can look back and yes, I did it. But it's you have to do mistakes along the way. You have to be able to laugh about your mistakes, and that's also a matter of practice. Shame is numbing, so you need to sort of take away and be able to laugh when you make a fool out of yourself. I think girls can be better to that, because I think we fall. It looks stupid when you fall. It's not a dignified action, but then you learn.
Thank you so much, Lisa. This was the perfect ending.
All the best
for
you, Lisa.
Whatever comes up, and hopefully see you soon.
Yeah, hope to see you. I have to run now, so, but bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.